Despite much that will seem confused, here and there may be found a helpful thought. There is much cause to hope. Ever since I spoke through you 2 years ago, according to your measurements of time, the veils between us have thinned and many on both sides are now engaged upon this splendid work. The teacher arranged us in our new and living robes and spoke of what lay ahead. We prayed together for illumination and the power to make our lives of greater service. It was a solemn, happy moment. I must not dwell upon the various tests put to each one of us before we were allowed within the temple. Nor can I tell you much that happened there. These experiences will come to many of you. There were 9 of us in the group, all that had passed the tests out of 81 in the 14th circle in the Hall of Instruction. We were welded into an instrument of succor, we were initiated into spiritual mysteries, we were shown a portion of the plan, a small fragment of which we were destined to fulfill. Each one of the 9 was allotted a special task and place in the ranks of the Army of Liberation. Our task is to free souls from the chains of their selfish thoughts which hang around them miserably upon their arrival on the borderland. You and many like you are members of this glorious army. In the Hall of Initiation, our teacher handed us over to a master who opened the doorways of our inner understanding. Of this I can tell you nothing now. Remember how sad and broken I was when I first came over here. Now I have my use and can share my joy with you. Take heart, all who still find themselves enshrouded in the gloomy canopies of self. At the master's bidding, an angel showed us the conditions surrounding the various states of illumination, the variations of light and color that could most effectively destroy the various kinds of darkness. We were shown how to protect our own minds from gloom and fear, how to reflect light through our every thought and deed. We were instructed how to meet and transmute the evil gases let loose in the purgatorial regions by thoughts of fear and sensuality. We were taken up into the temple tower and shown a vision of the glories of the 7 celestial spheres. I am only allowed to indicate vaguely what it means to pass through the first gateway of initiation on the path of selfless service. Is it not wonderful that I am here? Am I not fortunate to have been chosen for such glorious work? Do not wait until you come over. Start at once upon the pathway that will lead you to the temple of initiation. All true worlds are one and interpenetrate. The messenger is with me now. He says I must not speak further of this temple and its master and the angels who help forward our interior illumination. Next time I will take you to my own home. We will talk of simple homely matters. Good night. 24th of May 1919, 10 p.m. Greetings. Come home with me. When I spoke through to you 2 years ago, I had no settled home. I was a lonely wanderer, almost friendless and very sad. You helped me then. I often think of that with gratitude. Someday you must let me help you. I have been told something of the group to which you belong. You are doing useful work. Private Dowding took me by the hand and led me along one of the main thoroughfares of the country region to which he belonged. I was quite conscious of my external surroundings, sitting writing on the deck of a great liner on a stormy sunny sea, but I was also conscious of that inner journey in thought regions in company with my friend who still prefers to be known as Private Dowding. Let the scoffers scoff. The time is coming when such experiences as these will be freely shared by many men and women, while still on earth. I am not afraid to speak of them as part of my normal and natural life. WTP. I love my little home. The messenger helped me to create it. This path leads to it. Are not these mossy banks green and restful? A brook runs down one side. I have made friends with many of the water fairies in the spring up on the mountainside. Here is my little wood. I found it here when I first came. It was created by a radiant soul who has now passed joyfully to a higher sphere. The messenger told me I could call it mine. It was a time when words mine and thine still had meaning for me. Here above the wood on the hillside I have built my home. I want you to come in with me. That is my dog, my one faithful companion upon your earth. Have I never told you about him? He died while I was in France. I found him by accident soon after I came here. He recognized me and followed me. From that time all real loneliness has left me. I do not know if animals have immortal souls. I have much to learn. I can but relate my own experiences, and there is Frisker full of life and spirits. Frisker was a Manchester Terrier who certainly seemed as alive as any dog could be, full of spirit and intelligence. WTP, come into my home so that you can tell your friends about it. Private Dowding led me through a garden filled with trees and flowers into a small bungalow. I must use these terms although they are quite inadequate and are only symbolical. Steps led up into a wide porch through which we passed into a circular hall with a fountain in its center. There were flowers and pictures everywhere and deep comfortable seats and alcoves. A crystal globe stood upon a pedestal in a great hearth. What seemed like fire or some form of illumination played through the crystal globe from the hearth behind, filling the house with radiance. There were only four rooms in the bungalow, two on either side of the hall. The first we entered was filled with books. Between the bookcases on the walls were mirrors, strange mirrors about which I will speak later. It is in this room that Dowding works and studies. The next room is where he rests and dreams and renews his strength. The bow window gave upon a wonderful view stretching across the garden down the hillside over the treetops to a sapphire lake in the green valley below. I did not go into the two rooms on the left of the hall, but Dowding told me they were guest chambers often used by his two soldier pals who are now working in his group of nine. He has already promised to introduce me to them so that I may hear their stories. WTP. I am so pleased you like my home. Come and sit in the hall. That crystal has only been given to me recently. It reflects many of the events going on around me in this part of the country. The mirrors in my study reflect in symbolic form the effects of great events and movements taking place in your world. One recent event in London has produced profound effects here, in the crystal globe you are now looking at. I refer to the Albert Hall meeting held by spiritualists to demonstrate the nearness of our world to yours and your world to ours and to act as a memorial for the Soldiers Guild in battle. I was in the hall with my own group. We were among many similar groups. Thousands of disembodied soldiers were present. We were greatly moved. The messenger returned home with me when the meeting was over and gave me interesting advice and guidance. I will tell you some of the things he said next time we meet. 25th of May 1919, 10 a.m. It appears that there are two methods by which you can lift the curtain and communicate with our world. The first is the one more commonly in use at present. I am repeating the messenger's words, they are not my own. It is the automatic method, that is the use of trance mediums, certain mechanical devices, and automatic writing. The second method consists in the development of normal clairvoyance. This is safer. It leads to the best results. You are using what the messenger calls the normal clairvoyant method of talking to me now. The messenger dwelt upon the dangers connected with automatic communication and the possibilities of fraud. The veil should be lifted by natural methods, by trained clairvoyant vision and clairaudience. It can also be safely lifted during sleep. Public sittings organized professionally with entrance fees should be discouraged. Remember the messenger's words when with you last, the piercing of the veils should come about through spiritual and natural processes of mind and heart, and not through the employment of magic ritual or trance. There is usually one member of a family with deeper vision than the rest. There should be family groups everywhere. They should sit together in prayer and silence for half an hour on each Sunday or holy day, creating conditions that will enable us to approach. If one member of the family group passes over here, the other members should await his or her return, sitting together quietly in the usual way. When the time is ripe, communion will be established safely. There are dangers in the present situation. Thousands of untrained eager souls both here and with you are tearing at the veil. They use any methods that suggest themselves. Their thoughts and actions are uncontrolled. Desire outruns reason. Emotion upsets the will. Fools step in where angels fear to tread. The messenger feels strongly about this. I have been carefully trained before I could be employed on useful work. Schools of instruction are needed on your side too. Beware of a reaction from the present impetuous wave of interest in communication between the worlds. telepathy between members of a family on Earth should be practiced. If in London is able to speak to B in Sydney and B of Sydney passes over here, then direct communication can be set up very quickly. B remains asleep a while, then awakes and thinks of A in London. If A has not forgotten B, he will hear B's call, and conscious communication will be established. That is the natural way. It can be practiced without danger of pulling B back into Earth conditions. Contacts brought about through mediums are liable in time to delay the disembodied soul and to hold him near the Earth atmosphere. I am speaking to you now from my own home, which you have visited and described. I am sitting in my study impressing my thoughts upon your mind. You are visible to me on the mirror on my wall. I see you sitting at a table on a ship's deck. You are writing in a notebook. I can watch you clearly, yet I am not earthbound, nor am I dwelling in the land of mist. I am at home. You are where you are. We communicate by a natural method, by telepathy. It is well. 25th of May 1919, 9 p.m. The messenger tells me that some of his forecasts are being fulfilled. I asked him to send you more to include with the messages I am sending you. He does not think it necessary. People on Earth, he says, already live too largely either in the past or in the future. Prophetic utterances are interesting, sometimes serviceable, often dangerous. Man must live the day and do his best uninfluenced by sad memories of the past or fearful thoughts of the future. It is not easy. The present is the only real there is. If you but knew, both past and future are contained within it. I asked the messenger for advice on healing work, as you suggested. He says the time has not yet come for him to speak of this. I am becoming interested in spiritual healing work. Now I will tell you the stories of my two friends, as promised. They do not wish their names disclosed. I will call them Captain Y and Sergeant Z. These ranks they held while fighting before coming here. Captain Y shall tell his own story. I was conscious of another figure sitting with Dowding in his study, a tall man, wearing a similar cloak and robe to Dowding's and the same group star symbol on his breast, W.D.P. I was a regular soldier and went out to France in 1914 among the first. I was killed before the year was out. I cannot tell you much about it. It was at night, we were retreating, my horse had been shot beneath me. I was standing looking down upon him when a shell exploded near me. Nothing seemed to happen. I was still looking at my horse, but he was alive again, which struck me as very strange. I took him by the bridle, mounted, and rode away. The whole action was mechanical. I cannot give you many details. I was joined by another man I knew, also riding, a brother officer who had been stunned by the same shell and his horse was killed, I discovered later. He asked me where we were. I could not tell him. We soon knew that something must have happened, but we did not think that death had overtaken us. We both thought we had lost our way in the retreat and were wandering in strange country, dazed by fatigue and lack of food. We had had no proper sleep or food for 4 days. I was too dazed to wonder what would happen next. Soon I fell asleep. I could not keep awake, although I feared to sleep lest I should fall off my horse. I awoke to find myself in what I now know to be a hall of rest. My horse had disappeared, my companion also. It was only recently that I learned he had not been killed at all, but rendered unconscious by the shell that killed me. While senseless, he was able to be with me, riding on his own horse that had been killed. He was taken prisoner but is now released and well. I am trying to get through to him. There is little more to tell you. I rested until my own guide found me. He brought me to the hall of instruction where I have spent much time. I learned slowly, it was all strange to me. Then Dowding joined our circle and he has brought me to you. We work together. Dowding will tell you about it. There is no moral to my story. I came here quite simply, without distress. I was very sorry to leave your world, but I have many friends here and can work usefully. I have no more regrets and shall hope to be of service in the borderland where thousands remain in ignorance and misery. Conditions are improving and I am told the chaos in your world is to be stilled. We will do our best from here. Private Dowding, My sergeant friend is not here at present, but I will tell you about him. He was drowned when the transport he was traveling in was mined. He says he made a big struggle to reach a raft but was unsuccessful. He does not remember any feeling of distress whilst drowning, when once he had given up the struggle. He told me the actual sinking into unconsciousness was not unpleasant. Sergeant Zed does not know how long he remained unconscious. He says his passing over was gentle, that he traveled through the land of mist without mishap whilst still in a dazed condition. It seems that his brother found him quickly and brought him through. A bond of great affection linked these two. A year separated their coming over. A bond of love between two souls, if it be unselfish, will achieve much. Through it the passing out experience can be robbed of danger, made pleasant instead of fearful. Had I been met when I arrived, my troubles would have been less severe. I was met, but I was too self-centered to pierce the fog of my own selfish thoughts which shut me in on all sides. Sergeant Zed now works with us. You can watch our group at work on the borderland where most of our time is spent. Keep in touch with us, and when one in whom you are interested passed across, we will be there to make the pathway easy. I will return later. 26th of May 1919, 10 a.m. I would like to speak on spiritual healing. I'm beginning to study this subject. I believe it will ultimately supersede drugs and surgery in your world. Here all healing work is accomplished through allowing the mind to reflect healing rays of light from higher spheres. It could be the same in your world. The messenger tells me this is a subject in which you are greatly interested. I hope you will give me your ideas. I firmly believe that the healing of physical infirmities by spiritual methods and the unbarring of the gateways between our world and yours will do more than all else to bring about the speedy progress and happiness of the race. Do all in your power to bring this about. The messenger is with me now. Have you any question you would like to ask him? WTP, do you wish these further messages from PD published? Messenger. It is our wish that every possible step should now be taken to arouse interest among you in the realms in which we dwell. Mankind has concentrated thought too long upon what can be felt and seen and heard in the material world to the exclusion of all other interests. Life on Earth can but last a few score years at most. Men must prepare and train themselves for the wider life whilst still on Earth. Call attention to the conditions on this side of the veil so that men may come over to their homes and not into a country that is strange. The thoughts and experiences of my son, known to you as Private Dowding, should prove useful to many among you. WTP, was this why he was allowed to speak to me again? Messenger. It is no longer a question of allowing. Private Dowding has a settled abode among us and is doing good work. When he first arrived here, he was not in a fit condition to communicate with your world, because he had no understanding of his surroundings. WTP, how do you view the present campaign among spiritualists to break through the veil hiding your world from ours? Messenger. It is a natural outcome of the war. As the race grows in spiritual understanding, the need for the veil will disappear. It is part of the divine plan that this should be so. Breaks off here. Private Dowding. I see that the conditions around you make it difficult for the messenger's thoughts to reach your mind. I was in the smoking room, which was crowded and noisy. He will speak to you tonight when your body sleeps, and you can translate his thoughts into your language when conditions around you are more tranquil. I have just returned home from the land of mist. I find work the most interesting. I left a man who was very anxious to return to your earth. He was killed in a street accident and is totally unprepared for his new life here. Break again. Conditions impossible. PD promises to return tomorrow. 27th of May 1919, 10 a.m. I am sitting in my study resting after a period of strenuous work in the borderland. It is important that this sphere should cease to be a land of mist and gloom. When the radiance from the realms above has become diffused throughout the borderland, a great task will have been achieved. Think what it will mean. I can tell you best by illustration. You have seen London enshrouded in thick yellow fog. Imagine this fog lasting day in, day out, so that all activities of life become subservient to it. Would not the whole life of the city and its inhabitants become transformed? When the thick mist lifts from the borderland between your world and ours, a new and more spiritual era will begin. The soul arriving will bathe in light and gravitate immediately to his own heaven of rest and harmony. The fear of death will disappear. Man will pass across the river joyful and unafraid. Those he leaves behind him will watch his journey with eyes undimmed by tears. They will see the friends waiting to welcome him into the wider world. He will be allowed to relate his new and wonderful experiences to those he has left behind. There will be no fog between. Materialistic thinking and the fear of death have raised the barriers separating our life here from yours. All this must go. The fog has begun to lift. Help us to spread the radiance that will lift it all together. The task is not impossible. Your world needs inspiration from higher realms. Often our best endeavors to pierce the veils and illumine dark bases in the minds of men have borne no fruits. The fog has shut out the light, and men on earth have lived in darkness, or at least in twilight. This is, of course, symbolic. When the borderland becomes freed from gloom, filled with illumination, then a new era will begin on earth. Wars will cease. Disease and hatred will abate. Physical climates will improve. Discords of every kind will be replaced by harmony and progress. Men's vision will extend so that selfishness and greed will no longer seem attractive. Cannot you see what an important task this is, the thinning of the veils and the lighting of the borderland? The new era is upon us. The forces of evil are far spent. Light begins to pierce the gloom with which the minds of men have been filled so long. These are not empty words. The task before us remains stupendous, but the word has gone forth and we must obey our guides and masters. The powers of evil on your side and ours have fought to withstand the light. At one time it seemed as if they would succeed. The danger is over now. The clouds that hid the sun will disappear in rain. This rain will purify the borderland, wash away impurity, and flow into the minds of men as new rivers of life and truth. The messenger bids me tell you this. He speaks of what he knows. Make his words understood. The messenger is here and will speak to you. WTP reference has been made to the formation of schools of instruction in our own world for training men and women to help bring about the spiritual transformation to which Dowding has just referred. How are these to come into existence? Messenger. Every group of earnest students banded together on your side can attract to itself a guide from our spheres who will train and instruct them during waking hours and whilst the body sleeps. Each group should ask for unseen guidance and instruction. This will be given in various ways. It may come through books or friends at first. Soon a guide will gravitate to the group and make communication possible. When this has been brought about, the road will become easier. The guide will illumine the pathway to be trod by each member of the group. New groups will be formed, with each member of the older groups as a center. Gradually the world will become encircled in this way. Each group will find itself in touch with a group of students already trained on our side of the veil. Purify and illumine your own thinking so that the mists may be cleared away. This work is directed and blessed by beings from the highest spheres. Once having set your hand to the plow, do not turn back. WTP will this work be carried on by the religious organizations of our world? Messenger. This new campaign will be carried forward within existing organizations and without. Its progress will not be dependent on creeds or dogmas. It will shake itself free from superstitions and bigotry. Your task is to carry on your own work without let or hindrance from other groups. As time goes on, the groups of workers on your side and ours will be linked harmoniously. The light will spring from mind to mind. Nothing can withstand the coming illumination. At this the messenger withdrew. Note by WTP, the 28th of May 1919, 10 a.m. The return of Private Dowding was not altogether unexpected by me. I had been conscious for some time past that he wished to communicate again. When he first spoke to me in March 1916, I found no difficulty in setting down what he wished to say. He seemed to stand beside me while I wrote his story down. On the present occasion, the task has been more difficult. It is as if I had to catch Dowding's ideas as they fell from a great height. It is not always easy to translate the ideas into intelligible words. Personally, I am satisfied that it is Dowding who is communicating with me again, but I can offer no proof of this statement. I set down this record for what it may be worth but claim nothing for it. I have been in the habit of sitting in silence in the quiet room on my Nile boat each Sunday. On these occasions many friends from the wider world have visited me and my companion F.L. On the first Sunday in June 1919 a regular visitor, J.C., spoke to me about Dowding and said he would bring him to the boat. On a subsequent occasion Dowding came. He was no longer dressed in a private's uniform but in a blue cloak with flowing robe beneath and the star emblem of his group upon his breast. Dowding seemed delighted to find that he could speak through to me again. He promised to tell me about his present life, and when I told him I was going home by a long sea route he promised to visit me daily during the voyage. This promise has been carried out, and although the ship is so overcrowded that conditions are not good, yet I hope I have been able to clothe Dowding's thoughts in words that can be understood. I do not know that there is anything very new or striking about the present series of messages received from Private Dowding. They are interesting in that they show how his outlook has widened since he first arrived in a new world. I also think that his remarks about the borderland are useful and may help to clear up misconceptions about that strange place. Dowding's outlook on life has grown more optimistic and the messenger still seems satisfied that the race is approaching a new and golden era. All my experiences in the intermediary realm that separates whereas it should join our world from the wider world lead me to the conclusion that Dowding is correct in what he says on page 62 about materialistic thinking and the fear of death. There is one other subject I should like to comment upon. On page 68 the messenger dwells upon the dangers connected with automatic communication between the worlds. He strongly urges the need for the development of what is called normal clairvoyance and clairaudience if the best results are to be obtained. I have had some experience of both the automatic and the natural methods to which both he and Dowding refer and can thoroughly endorse all that is said in this connection. The greater my experience of group work, referred to on page 77 and elsewhere, the surer I am that this is by far the sanest and safest method for piercing the veils and for developing natural clairvoyance. May I be allowed to repeat the warning given in the first part of Private Dowding's messages as to the time factor? That a new era is dawning upon this sad and storm-tossed world is now apparent. The dawn will still be dawn and not full daylight for many years to come. References made to the swift progress of the race must not be interpreted too literally. The time factor cannot be gauged with any degree of accuracy even by the denizens of the wider worlds. Finally, may I be allowed on Private Dowding's behalf to thank all those people who have written to express their appreciation of the messages that he has given to the world. I hope that the present message will receive as friendly a reception as the previous one. WTP, Part V, The Passing of Major P. To the January and April numbers of The Quest, 1915, Mystery. E. Fourniard Elb contributed to illuminating articles on the negative evidences for survival of life after the dissolution of the physical body. He sums up his case by saying that death is the cessation not of life, but of our communication with it. Now the question arises as to whether there is any necessity for this communicator to cease. If we take it for granted that there is no negative evidence against the possibility of survival, is it possible to discover any positive evidence for survival? At the outset of any attempt to investigate the conditions of life immediately following physical death, the student is faced with almost overwhelming difficulties. What would appear to be first-hand and positive evidence to the investigator himself becomes of necessity second-hand and therefore almost valueless to those who attempt to follow his researches. In other words, the individual can prove the continuation of life beyond physical dissolution only by his own personal experience. The experiences related by his fellows cannot be considered by him as either final or conclusive. This fact raises a barrier that cannot easily be broken down, and greatly complicates all research work into the regions that lie just on the other side of physical death. After that, the crucial question is, can you or I actually obtain first-hand evidence of such survival? for who can watch beside a deathbed or on the battlefield the passing away of life from the body, without speculating on the after-death conditions of that life?